Hello, beautiful people. This is the Michael Slate Show, and I am your guest host, Sansara Taylor. On today's show, we'll be sharing segments from the RNL Revolution Nothing Less show, which airs on YouTube. Let's begin.
After illegally rounding up legal immigrants who have been convicted of no crime, denying them due process, and sending them to a torture chamber prison in El Salvador, Trump has openly threatened to do the same with citizens of this country. If this Trump regime is allowed to remain in power, no one will be safe from its fascist rule. Whoever Trump decides is an enemy will be targeted with no protection from the law. Black people and other people of color, immigrants, women, LGBT people, and others Trump regards as inferior and unworthy will be subjected to discrimination, oppression, persecution, brutality, and murder without even the pretense of equality under the law or equality and rights in any sense.
Welcome to the RNL, the Revolution Nothing Less show. My name is Sansara Taylor, and I'm joined by Annie Day. Welcome, Annie.
Very glad to be here, and welcome to everyone tuning in. This show proceeds from the interests of humanity and working to make an actual revolution to overthrow the system of capitalism and imperialism, which is crushing humanity here and all over the world. We open today's show with the voice of the revolutionary leader, Bob Avakian, exposing what we're facing with this fascist regime and what's needed, with video of ICE raids that have been taking place all across the country. You'll be hearing more from Bob Avakian later in today's episode about the new communism that he's developed, a framework for human emancipation for real.
So we're going to start today's episode as we have been, as we have to, almost every week now, with just some of the escalating fascist atrocities and acceleration towards a fascist nightmare for this country and for people all over the world that is Trump MAGA. And we're going to bring this alive a little bit, and then we're going to talk about the urgency of people standing up against this in the streets, in public, in nonviolent mass protest, raising the demand. The Trump fascist regime must go now, not next week, not next month, not 2026. It's way too late. It's got to go now. And we've got to be rallying people to raise this demand and fight to see it through, to create such a profound political crisis in this country through the mass sustained protest and resistance of millions, starting with however many we start with, but growing to be millions, such that Trump cannot govern this country, cannot impose his fascist program, and cannot even maintain the hold of power in this country. And specifically, this Saturday, on the 17th, there are protests that are being called by refusefascism.org all across this country to raise that demand, to get it in front of millions and millions right now as millions are being jolted, terrified, terrorized, traumatized, and infuriated by what this regime is doing. This Saturday, be in the streets. Raise this demand, get this seen by millions. If there's a protest where you are, go to it. If there's not, get some friends together, make a sign, get out where the people can see you. And later in the show, we're going to share an interview that I did with a UCLA student who is on hunger strike around the situation in Gaza and a few other things.
This morning, the Supreme Court heard arguments about this really reactionary Trump move to undo birthright citizenship. We've been covering this on this show and at revcom.us. This is a very big deal. This is basically means that if you are born in this country, you are considered a citizen. And this is a transformation that happened in this country coming out of the Civil War, where people who had, you know, no longer born slaves were now considered citizens. And this had to do with the norms of the society that were forged coming out of the Civil War. And on day one of his presidency, Trump tried to undo that through executive order, which he cannot do. It would be reactionary enough if he went through the mechanisms to try to change the Constitution, but he didn't do that. He tried to just, through executive order, you know, basically undo the Constitution. And the hearing in the Supreme Court had to do with whether the federal courts will have any ability to to check Trump's fascist program. So stay tuned for more at RevCom.us and more on this show, which we'll be covering. But this really does have to do with Trump's, the whole way in which Trump is considering himself above the law and determined to shred the law.
Yeah, and nobody should allow this society to be dragged back to a time when your basic rights, your legal status is determined by the race or the inferior legal status of your ancestors. And that's what he's attempting to do here. So, yeah, we're going to be covering it, like you said. We want to now go to Newark, New Jersey. This is where Ross Baraka, the mayor, a black mayor of a major city in this country, a predominantly black city in this country, who has been standing up for the rights of immigrants and insisting on inspecting a detention center where immigrants are being held right in his town of Newark, in his city of Newark, and he's been being denied entry. So he was down there along with several members of Congress for, you know, repeatedly he's been going there. And instead of allowing him in to do the inspection, ICE agents roughly brutalized him and arrested him and manhandled these Congress people. We want to go now to Noche Diaz and Rafael Cadaris, two leaders of the RevCom Corps for the Emancipation of Humanity, down in Newark the very next day, speaking out against what's happening and breaking it down so you can follow it too.
Right here in front of Delaney Hall, a thoroughly American concentration camp in Newark, New Jersey. Yesterday, a gang of masked goons came out and arrested Mayor Ross Baraka. This is another step and another leap of Trump using ICE and federal agents as his personal political police, rounding up students and putting them in ICE detention camps, arresting a judge for demanding that ICE actually follow the law, and now arresting a mayor who is demanding that oversight over a concentration camp.
And if they can do this to a mayor of a major city like this, think about what they can do to the vulnerable people. Think about what they can do to undocumented immigrants like we saw yesterday in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Stop! Ma'am, stop! Stop!
Think of what they can do to black people, to trans youth, to all those who are already oppressed.
This is very clearly preaching, trying to intimidate us.
This attack on Mayor Baraka is part of the momentum and direction of fascism.
Yesterday, Stephen Miller said, get rid of habeas corpus. This is taking things back to the dark ages, to arbitrary authority by whoever's in power. They can label you a gangster, a terrorist, an enemy, an undesirable, ship you off to some hellhole prison, disappear you, no lawyer, no trial, no due process whatsoever. This fascist regime must go now. As we've been out here today, so many people have been going by honking, giving us their fists.
This is a call to everyone who saw what happened outside of this detention center. This is what is going to come if we don't stand up, and we have a chance to stop this.
May 17th is the day all across the country, New York City, 1 p.m. at Union Square, but wherever you are, be out in the streets.
And we got to be defending people like Baraka, like the judge, like the students who stand up to this fascism, finding our courage, standing together. People who think somebody else should be doing something, well, this is another wake-up call. Even the people in power who stand up to Trump are going to face repression. The only thing that's going to stop this is us, the masses of people in our millions, mobilizing and making this fascism ungovernable.
So that was really powerful. And now we want to go to video from Representative Robert Menendez and Bonnie Watson Coleman, who are also at the ICE detention center with Baraka when he was arrested.
Now, I want to note that Bonnie Coleman is 80 years old. She doesn't look it, but listen to her and think about the fact that they put their hands on anybody but this 80-year-old congresswoman. Watch.
ICE brought to meet the mayor of Newark over 20 armed individuals. 20 armed individuals to confront the mayor of Newark along with three members of Congress. It was an act of intimidation. It was an act of intimidation, not just to the mayor, not just to us, but to everyone watching. We know what ICE has been doing in our communities. We know that the president lied and this administration lies every day when they're saying they're going after criminals. It is not true. They feel no weight of the law. They feel no restraint on what they should be doing. And that was shown in broad daylight today when they not just arrested the mayor of Newark, but when they put their hands on two members of Congress who are standing behind me. How is this acceptable to anyone in this country? How is this acceptable? I fight along with these two incredible women every day for the people of New Jersey. We fight for the country that we should be. What we saw today is the country that we live in under Donald Trump and his Department of Homeland Security, under his ICE, does not reflect who we are as a country. It reflects everything wrong with the moment that we're in.
This, ladies and gentlemen, is not a moment of stunning. This is not a moment of scared. This is a movement of the people in this country who will push back on anybody who dares to abridge our rights.
Yep.
Look, she's right. This is not a time to be afraid. This is a time to fight. Now, a minute ago when we were playing Noche Diaz and Rafael Cadeiras, Rafael spoke about something called habeas corpus. This is something a lot of people may not be familiar with, but Governor J.B. Pritzker of Illinois recently broke it down, and we want to play how he explained it.
This country was founded on the idea of habeas corpus. It's a fancy legal term that in plain words means no government has a right to arbitrarily take your freedom away from you. Preserving habeas corpus is not some fever dream of the left-wing echo chamber. It's a fundamental concept of justice that people have fought and died for dating back to the Middle Ages. It was in the Magna Carta. It was considered by our nation's founders to be so vital to our liberty that they wrote it right into the Constitution.
So habeas corpus means they cannot take you, kidnap you, disappear you, detain you without giving you reason, violation of some law somewhere, and a chance to then defend yourself against it. And this is what they are. Why is J.B. Pritzker giving a lecture about this? Because this is actually something that Trump and his officials are threatening to take away. Listen to Stephen Miller, one of his top aides, and Stephen Bannon, one of his fascist war room henchmen.
And architects.
There you go.
Habeas corpus is a legal procedure explicitly mentioned in the Constitution. It allows people to challenge the federal government in court if they've been detained. And one of the president's top aides today, Stephen Miller, confirmed publicly that the White House is exploring this extraordinary step.
Well, the Constitution is clear, and that, of course, is the supreme law of the land, that the privilege of the writ of habeas corpus can be suspended in a time of invasion. So I would say that's an option we're actively looking at. Look, a lot of it depends on whether the courts do the right thing or not.
If you're not an American citizen, you're here illegally, there's no due process. And I'm telling you, this is coming to a head. We are going to suspend the writ of habeas corpus if the courts keep ruling against us and don't allow these mass deportations to continue. The Supreme Court's going to have to make a decision about President Trump's Article II powers, and we're going to see it. And I believe if the courts keep trying to slow him down, you're going to see him, as Stephen Miller laid out pretty well yesterday, and it'll be, I'm sure, developed over time, suspension of the writ of habeas corpus.
Just think about what you just heard. I just want to underscore this one more time. This is the fascist regime basically can say, like they're saying about these judges, you're a depraved criminal. They can say, like they're saying about these immigrants, you're a terrorist. They can say these things and you have no ability to contest this in court. They can disappear you and you have no legal recourse. This is like Alice in Wonderland, sentence first, trial after, and trial maybe if you're lucky. This is fascism.
So that's what they're openly threatening to do. And I also want to highlight that both Steve Bannon and Steve Miller emphasize that they are going to rip up that writ of habeas corpus, this right, if the courts keep ruling against Trump. Just think about that. If the courts rule in their favor, then they respect the courts. Really, they're using the courts to legitimize their fascist atrocities and violation of the rule of law and any basic rights of the people. But if the courts rule against them, they're just going to defy the courts and rip up the right anyhow. That's kind of the way they view elections. It's if we win, it's legitimate. If we lose, it's illegitimate. This is fascist lunacy, and it's extremely dangerous. And I think it's really important that people not avert your eyes to what's happening. This is being said. These people follow through on what they tell you. They are doing the things they promised, and they are planning to do this if they feel it's necessary. So we have to confront this and we have to act to stop it. And here's the thing. It is not too late to stop this. There are tens of millions of people who hate what's being done, and more are being shocked each day, outraged each day. That's the significance of somebody like a mainstream governor of Illinois speaking out against this, as J.B. Pritzker did. This is the significance of Ross Baraka, a mayor of a major city, walking and trying to inspect this detention center, and the anger and the depth of feeling that you saw from Robert Menendez and Bonnie Watson Coleman speaking out against this violation. This is the significance of people in different parts of society waking up and protesting in big and small ways across this country. But this has to come together rapidly into something that is much more determined, much more cohesive, on a nationwide scale, demanding that this regime be removed from power now. And it's also important, if this is going to happen, that people have to really confront fully what we are facing in this regime. This is fascism. This is not a pendulum swing. This is not something that can be modulated. They are going for a radical remaking of the form of rule in this country.
Yeah, and fascism has direction and momentum. And it's not too late, but it can become too late. So to illustrate this more, we wanted to play a very short excerpt from a social media message from Bob Avakian, where he breaks down what this is.
Now the Trump regime is determined to use the power of government to enforce white supremacy and anti-immigrant terror, to rip away basic rights for women, including the right to control their own bodies, and to deny LGBT people the right to exist. This regime is moving with crazed speed to deny and eliminate basic rights for everyone who does not conform to their fascist rule, and to forcibly use the powers of government against anyone they regard as enemies, terrorizing, disappearing, torturing, and silencing any opposition. At one and the same time, they insist that they are above the law and that Trump is the law. They recognize no authority beyond their own raw exercise of power. This is fascism, and people need to understand this, or they cannot and will not act in their millions and millions in the way they need to defeat this fascism.
So like Bob Avakian said, people need to understand what we're up against. This is fascism. They also, we need to see and recognize the profound potential in this society of the people who are agonized, the people who are straining against this, the people who it doesn't sit right with, even if they're not acting yet. And we need to recognize that there are people speaking out on this and something to build on and seize on with this. We want to share a clip of Robert De Niro speaking at the Cannes Film Festival recently.
In my country, we're fighting like hell for the democracy we once took for granted. And that affects all of us. That affects all of us here because the arts are democratic. Art is inclusive. It brings people together. Like tonight, art looks for truth. Art embraces diversity. And that's why art is a threat. That's why we are a threat to autocrats and fascists. America's Philistine president has had himself appointed head of one of our premier cultural institutions. He has cut funding and support to the arts, humanities, and education. And now he has announced a 100% tariff on films produced outside the U.S. Let that sink in for a minute. You can't put a price on creativity, but apparently you can put a tariff on it. Of course, this is unacceptable. all these attacks are unacceptable. And this isn't just an American problem, it's a global one. Unlike a film, we can't just sit back and watch. We have to act, and we have to act now. Without violence, but with great passion and determination, it's time for everyone who cares about liberty to organize, to protest, and when there are elections, of course, to vote.
And another important voice in this is from J. Michael Luttig, and he wrote a major article in The Atlantic called The End of the Rule of Law in America. So J. Michael Luttig is a very well-known conservative judge. Basically, he's been calling out the shredding of the rule of law, and the article's quite extensive, actually. But this is somebody who served under H.W. Bush. This is somebody who was a counsel to Clarence Thomas. This is somebody who is a high-level conservative. He was the legal counsel for Boeing for years. But since January 6th, he's been sounding the alarm about the shredding of the rule of law. And I want to read from this article just to give a sense of what he's seeing. He also actually, he ended the article quoting Frederick Douglass, who was a former slave and well-known abolitionist and called for mass protest to people to stand up against, at that point, the Confederacy. So Luttig, in the middle of this article, he says that the rule of law casualties of these presidentially provoked national crises are mounting by the day. America cannot withstand 3.5 more years of this president if his first few months are a harbinger of what lies ahead. In other words, are a sign of what lies ahead.
And he calls for some kind of uprising, yes?
Yeah, at the end of his article, I'm sorry, at the end of the article, he called on people in this country to rise up and say no more.
Yeah, so we wanted to put these things together. There's a protest from the grassroots that are happening across this country. There are prominent voices, not enough, but they exist, like Robert De Niro speaking out from their stages and using their platforms. We need more of that. And then you have ruling class figures. We've highlighted a number of them, a handful of Democrats earlier in the show, but this conservative judge, there are others who are not radical people, not leftists, not people who see a problem with the fundamental nature of this system, which we do on this show. We're fighting for revolution. We see the problem as rooted in this country and the soil that has given rise to the white supremacy and hatred of women and global empire that Trump is taking to extreme new levels. But you have other people who do not share those views, who believe in this country and see this fascism as a threat and are sounding the alarm. And what we need, and part of what people need to understand, is that a struggle from below, yes, nonviolent, but fierce and determined, demanding that this regime must go now, that is sustained, not symbolic, one day protest, go home, you did your job. No, sustained, growing in determination and numbers can start to interact with these cracks in the ruling institutions, these divisions at the top of society and through every major institution in this society, which is all of them are being split apart and polarized. And with the struggle from below, these can interact in a way that can actually potentially shift the alignment in this country on every level and including in the ruling structures to create the kind of situation where the regime is removed. And this comes together with other contradictions that the rulers are seeing amongst themselves that are not how do we emancipate humanity, but their contradictions can be split open and acted upon from below. And so it's the top and bottom acting together. That's what we have to affect. And it underscores what we're doing this Saturday with the protests and going forward out in the streets, raising the demand. The fascist Trump regime must go now. And then from the 17th, taking that and spreading it throughout society even more powerfully.
Yeah, and I just think it also shows the breadth of that slogan, the power of that slogan, how many people can see the world that they want to fight for in that slogan, that the Trump fascist regime must go now. Before we close out this segment, I wanted to speak to one other aspect of the urgency of driving this regime from power. And it's the inhumanity of this fascism. And we've been giving life to that. We opened the show with it, the viciousness that's being visited upon immigrants, the ugly attacks being visited upon LGBT people, especially trans people. There is a cruelty that is being celebrated with this fascism. And there is a deep urgency if we are to rescue our own humanity, and if we are to rescue humanity at all, to come together and drive this regime out with the beauty and the power of the other refuse fascism slogan, in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America.
Yeah. Are you going to be the kind of people who accept this, swallow this, cower and go along with it and lose your humanity? Or are you going to regain it and expand it by coming together with others to stand up against this and win a different future?
So speaking of that different future, we want to, talk about and move to a clip from the revolutionary leader, Babavakian. And in the declaration, we demand a whole new way to live, a fundamentally different system. It makes the point that so long as we're living under the rule of capitalism, imperialism, we'll defend people against attacks on their lives and on the rights that are supposed to be guaranteed under the U.S. Constitution. And then it goes on and it says, but we need a different system, a whole different constitution, the constitution for the new socialist republic in North America. Just speaking about this constitution in a New Year's statement in 2021, Babavakian, talked about the expansiveness and the extraordinary nature of this constitution. And you got to ask him about this in the interview that were done earlier this year. I want to read that paragraph, and then we can go to you asking Babavakian to expand on this. So in talking about this constitution, Babavakian said this. He said, regarding the constitution for the new socialist republic in North America, authored by Babavakian, it is a fact that nowhere else in any actual or proposed founding or guiding document of any government is there anything like not only the protection, but the provision for dissent and intellectual and cultural ferment that is embodied in this constitution for the new socialist republic in North America. While this has as its solid core a grounding in the socialist transformation of the economy with the goal of abolishing all exploitation and the corresponding transformation of the social relations and political institutions to uproot all oppression and the promotion through the educational system and in society as a whole of an approach that will enable people, and this is a quote from the Constitution, that will enable people to pursue the truth wherever it leads with a spirit of critical thinking and scientific curiosity. And in this way, to continually learn about the world and be better able to contribute to changing it in accordance with the fundamental interests of humanity, end quote. And then B.A. went on and he said, all this will unchain and unleash a tremendous productive and social force of human beings, enabled and inspired to work and to struggle together to meet the fundamental needs of the people. Transforming society, and these are the fundamental needs of the people, he says, transforming society in a fundamental way and supporting and aiding revolutionary struggle throughout the world, aiming for the final goal of a communist world, free from all exploitation and oppression, while at the same time addressing the truly existential, environmental, and ecological crises in a meaningful and a comprehensive way, which is impossible under this system of capitalism imperialism. So that's a very meaty sentence. You can go to revcom.us. We have that highlighted there. And in this interview, you asked Babavakian to expand on this.
Yeah, we want to play this. We want to lift our sights. We're talking about the horror that we're facing and the need to make a revolution, the need to defeat the fascism. This is what's possible.
I want to have you speak about this in relation to the Constitution that you wrote for the new socialist republic in North America. And you've made the point that, and it's true, never before in any proposed or actually existing founding document of a government has there been any thing close to the level of not only provision for dissent, protest, disagreement ferment, striking out in many different directions, artistically, culturally, and politically, as is written into the Constitution you authored, but also the encouragement for this and the fostering of it, while at the same time, the whole of society, the economy, everything will be oriented in a different way to meeting people's needs and overcoming oppression. Can you give an example of how that's built into the Constitution you wrote and a little bit more on why that matters so much?
Yeah, well, there are a lot of examples, a lot of different dimensions. I mean, I could take one, for example, in the legal system and the rights of the people. Not only is the right of dissent upheld, including the right to advocate getting rid of the new socialist system and going back to capitalism. You know, if people attempt to violently overthrow the new socialist system, then they'll be defeated in that. But advocating for doing that is protected under this Constitution. But beyond that, let me give you, I started to talk about the legal system. In the legal system, it establishes in the Constitution not only that there'll be institutions in the government for prosecuting crimes and, criminal activity that people are accused of, but also there'll be provision for defense provided for people who are being so prosecuted, who are in an adversarial position with the government. Because it's recognized that there can be contradictions, even in a socialist society, between the government and the people where the government is wrong. So that's a very important thing to be stated, directly right in the Constitution, which it is. And then it said that the institutions that provide for defense for people who are in an adversarial position, being prosecuted or whatever by the government, that the funds for that have to be at least equal to what's provided for the prosecution, institutions that prosecute people in this situation. Now think about the people who are working as public defenders, under this system, and the idea that they would have the funds at least equal to what the resources the prosecutor have is completely unthinkable under this system. So that's just one thing. One aspect of it. You go through the and even in the prisons, which, yes, there will be a need for prisons. There will be still people who commit common crimes, quote unquote, including serious ones. And there will be people who attempt to violently attack people who are working to carry forward the revolution, which will be criminalized, if you're violently attacking people. If people are tried through their due process, and due process is provided for extensively in this Constitution, including real emphasis on the presumption of innocence, which is a joke in this society, but real emphasis on the presumption of innocence of people accused of crimes. But if they are tried through due process and convicted and sentenced and imprisoned, it's said not only that the conditions there have to be humane and the standards have to be those of society in general, rather than the terrible conditions in which people are held imprisoned under this system, but also in terms of the people's education. Not only is education provided for, but it said specifically that there have to be available to them all kinds of materials that put forward a broad array of viewpoints, not just the viewpoint of the socialism and of the socialist government, even things which historical works and other works that are in opposition to what the socialist government stands for and is working to bring about. That's also, an application of what I'm talking about with the new communism. Or in the educational system, the same thing. The purpose of the educational system is not as it is under this system, so that we can get a bunch of technocrats so we can outcompete and win conflicts with other capitalist imperialist countries. It's as the Constitution says, to enable people to pursue the truth wherever the truth leads, on the basis of scientific curiosity and intellectual ferment. Now, I'm paraphrasing, but you go to the Constitution, you can see that basic point is right in there. Or you can go into the media and culture. In the media, it said, that even in the government-run media, there has to be provision for people to articulate opposing views right in the government media. But beyond that, there has to be extensive funding for independent media which are not, you know, just tied to the line and the position of the government and may be critical of the government, even may be critical of the whole socialist system, that there has to actually be public funding to enable those people to give voice to that. And the same in the realm of culture. Not only a fostering of culture on a broad scale, but also even cultural works which do the same, which call into question, you know, not only policies at a particular time of the government, but even the whole system, that the whole new system that's been brought into being and where it's attempting to go. Why? Not because ultimately I'm, after all, a nice liberal and want to, you know, pander to all these liberals out there who complain about communism being repressive. That's their problem. What the reason for this is, it goes back to everything that's actually true is good for what we're setting out to do, and you need a lot of intellectual and cultural ferment, first of all, so that people can, you know, give expression to that and can breathe and feel at ease in society and can be enriched by a lot of that, and so that you can sort through and learn more deeply what the reality actually is through this very complex and at times even intense process. And I've said that, you know, for the people leading this, who do recognize the need to take it to communism and to work through all the contradictions and conflicts to overcome all the oppressive and exploitative relations, for those people to implement what's called for in this Constitution really will require them at times to go to the brink of being drawn and quartered, pulled apart by the, you know, by the contradictory trends and struggles in society. But you have to be willing to do that in order to more deeply carry out the process of advancing toward, you know, beyond all these four alls that Marx talked about, all the exploitation, oppression, the you know, repressive institutions, the stultifying and degrading culture, and get to a whole different world where all those things finally are left behind and human beings really can relate to each other as fully human beings.
So that was Bob Avakian from a part two of the two-part interview, Humanity Does Not Have to Live This Way. And you should watch the full thing. I mean, it was really incredible. It was, and I think that part two especially gets a lot into what's new in the new communism. And then you see it applied there. And I think especially right now with the rule of law being shredded and, people, you know, fighting for the constitution of this system, it really matters to raise your sights to what's possible with a whole different constitution, a whole different system.
Yeah. You know, it's been said, and I want to repeat it here, that trying to evaluate Bob Avakian and his new communism and the work that he's done, the leadership he's providing on the basis of what passes for political thought today is like trying to evaluate Einstein on the basis of astrology. And I'm bringing this in now because what you just heard from Bob Avakian was him grappling with the contradictions of leading and running a whole new society, a whole new system, not in make-believe, how you dream it up and wish it could be, but dealing with the world as it actually has been created through thousands of years of oppressive divisions, exploitation, but also the material basis that exists for us to live a different way, and how you take this society in the wake of a revolution to overthrow this system and rebuild a new economy, a new way to live, and have a whole host of rights and protections for the people that would make life a joy to live in, but also enable society to move forward to abolishing all exploitation and oppression. And this marks a radical break, definitely from this society that we live in, but also a radical break from even the best of communism as it has been understood and practiced in the past. Which, yes, you're lied to about it. You're told all kinds of slanders. It wasn't the nightmare you're told, but it also wasn't as liberating and as scientific as it needs to be for us to get all the way free. And this is what Bob Avakian has broken through on. And almost no one is even thinking about these questions. They're over there puttering around in astrology. And he is opening up the door for us to really grapple with and then fight to make real a whole different way humanity could be living.
Yeah, again, so watch these interviews, watch them with others, talk about them, spread them. Join the campaign to get this social media, to get Bob Avakian's voice and vision and leadership impacting throughout all of society. If you're not following at Bob Avakian on social, at Bob Avakian Official on social media, do so on all social media platforms. And we're not able to get into it this week, but there is a new social media message from Bob Avakian that's so of the moment. I mean, it all is, but it's Revolution Number 116, why Black people should be among the front lines of those fighting to defeat Trump MAGA fascism. It's kicked up a big debate online. Join the debate, spread it. We hope to be covering this more soon, but this really, really matters to get everywhere, you know, especially now.
All right. So there's just a couple things more we want to do in today's episode. We want to go now to an interview that I did with a student who has been on hunger strike. She's a UCLA student and her name is Maya. And she is part of what's actually become a wave of students going on hunger strike against the ongoing genocide in Gaza and demanding that their schools divest from any association with Israel and the genocide it's inflicting on Gaza at the California state system, at Stanford, and also being joined by students at Yale.
And Maya said if they, she will either keep hunger striking until she is intubated or until the school meets with her. So it's very determined and inspiring. And I think it's especially important, and she talks about this in the interview, that they're hunger striking at the very moment when Israel is inflicting literal forced starvation. In yesterday's New York Times, a bunch of Israeli army soldiers and figures came out saying, if you do not, like, if we do not bring in food and aid into Gaza, there will be mass starvation from which there, you know, could be no return. You're talking about mass inflicted death on the people of Gaza. And I just want to say one more thing about what's happening in Gaza right now is just a couple days ago, there's a journalist, a very well-known journalist in Gaza who was murdered. He was in his hospital bed. And Israel dropped a drone missile targeting to kill him. And his name was Hassan Eslai. He was very well known. And you just see it's the mass ongoing genocide and the attempts to cover this up. So it's in that light that it's really important that these students continue, despite the repression, continue to put themselves on the line.
So we're going to go to my interview with Maya. I spoke to her on day 4 of her hunger strike. She is now on day 7. Let's watch.
All right, so I'm here with Maya. This is day 4 of your hunger strike. Yeah, got the shirt. So why don't we start by you telling us a little bit about yourself and what makes you feel so passionate about standing up against the genocide in Gaza?
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm half Palestinian, half Lebanese. My mom was born and raised in Ramallah, Palestine, which is in the West Bank. I've always been very pro-Palestine, obviously. Like, being born Palestinian is kind of being born an activist in a kind of sad way. But I was in Palestine on October 7th. I was in Ramallah and witnessing everything there, the talks, and sometimes we could see the rockets, and witnessing it all firsthand, it kind of ignites you in a way that I wasn't fully ignited before. And also because of the severity of this genocide. You know, Israel has done this before, but just the severity of this attack, it made me feel like I had to do what I could.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the encampment that was here on this campus. We're right in front of where it was. There was actually encampments on hundreds of campuses across the country. Did that surprise you? How you were part of it? What was it like?
No, actually, it doesn't surprise me at all. I think my generation and this age of students are just incredible. I think that the people that I'm in community with are just so much more empathetic and more understanding of the world than maybe the majority of the people that were before us. And I think it was really, it was so, so beautiful. And I did find myself crying a lot because of how passionately people were feeling about Palestine, because we shared that passion alone for so long. And then seeing it, it's like people understood what I was talking about this whole time. It was extremely validating and beautiful. And that gave me like something inside of me that will keep me going for like another 50 years.
It spread among a lot of students and a lot of people who had never paid attention to the issue before, right?
Yeah. People, I mean, like people I've met that have literally never, they never knew about Palestine before October 7th. And now they care and they're willing to put their bodies on the line for it. It was like out of a movie. I don't know. It was really awesome.
Is there any one or two experiences that you had here that really stays with you, that brings alive what it meant to you and what it meant to others to be part of the encampment?
Yes. Okay. So, you know, the encampment was huge. Like, I'm sure maybe you guys can put a shot of how big this area is. And they dedicated different parts of the encampment to different things. And there were little areas for people to pray for in their different religions. So there were Jewish students doing Shabbat inside of the encampment, and it was like so beautiful because I felt like that image literally broke like 100 years of propaganda that the Palestinian movement hates Jewish people, and it's like we're here guiding the students or protecting the students who are doing Shabbat from the pro-Zionist crowd that's coming in to disturb them. And then we had students praying Fajr, like praying Muslims students praying, and then we had Christian students praying on Sundays, and there was like a little chapel and a little church, and I felt like the image of it and seeing it was so extremely beautiful that will always be in my mind as something that, like, it's just like, it's like a 77 years of Israeli propaganda can be destroyed by three students, all different faiths, holding hand, fighting for one thing. And I thought that that's what this was all about.
In the last year, one of the big weapons that the Trump regime has used, and the school administrations and a lot of the fascist Republicans and Democrats who've gone after the student protesters have leveled the accusation that these encampments, that the student movement is overwhelmingly an anti-Semitic movement. I wonder if you want to respond to that.
It's so disgustingly ingenuine and hurtful to the actual Jewish students inside the encampment to hear that what they're doing and what they're dedicating a big portion of their young life to goes against their core belief of Judaism is just so, it's just disgusting. If you watch the Encampments movie, you see like these large groups of Jewish students literally saying like, they are saying that they're protecting us from anti-Semitism, but they are hurting us. And I think the claim that what we were doing is anti-Semitic oversaturates the word anti-Semitic and puts Jewish students in danger of actual anti-Semitism. Because now people don't believe you when you say that there's an act of anti-Semitism. Now people on campus are not going to believe you because they don't know if it was an actual attack of anti-Semitism or if it was a student protesting for Palestine.
Okay, so I want to talk about your hunger strike. I'm going to fast forward and we'll go back to some of what else has been happening, but you haven't eaten in 4 days.
Yeah.
How do you feel and why are you on hunger strike?
Yeah, I feel very hungry. But I feel like more than the hunger, I feel very determined. And I think that's what's getting me through. I've been on hunger strike for 4 days. I've been on hunger strike for 4 days, and it feels powerful. It does. It feels strong, and it feels important.
So you're on hunger strike at the same time that there is a enforced famine on Gaza. I mean, it's been an unrelenting genocide for over a year now, and every time we get reports, it's worse, and you can't imagine it could get worse. But the last few months has been absolutely no food let in. People are starving to death. I just read that half of the children in Gaza wish that they were dead. And I wonder if you want to speak about the connection between what you're doing and what you're seeing there.
Yeah. So today is the 71st day without food or aid entering Gaza. If you don't think that a child starving anywhere, in any country in the entire world, even in Israel, in Palestine, in Ghana, in any country, if you don't think a child starving is an absolute failure of humanity, and you're not willing to do whatever it takes to feed that child, you have lost any semblance of what it means to be a human being. You know, there's this Zionist belief that the children of Gaza are their enemy. And then you see these videos of the children of Gaza, and they're crying, and they're saying, like, I want to die right now. I want to die. I want to go see my dad in heaven. Or saying, I'm watching my mother and my sister and my dad starve to death. Or the mothers in Gaza who came out on Mother's Day and said that I wish for death because it would be the only thing that could save me from the pain of watching my children die in front of me. There's a real problem in this country and in everywhere where that doesn't make the people in the country stop everything they're doing. And that's the problem. It is simply by chance that you are sitting here right now at UCLA and not a child in Gaza right now. It is simply by chance. These children did not choose any of this, any of the things that are happening. And yet they are being punished by a fascist militarized government over the land beneath their feet.
I wonder if you have any words for other students on this campus, but nationwide, and people more broadly about what's happening and how you found your courage, what your challenge or your invitation is to others.
I want to start by saying, like, the fear that your administration has instilled in you is their number one weapon against you. There is consequences. I have faced many consequences for what I've done. But in 50 years, when you're with your children and maybe your grandchildren, and you think back to this time, you're not going to think about that test that you were allowed to sit in on and you passed and you whatever. You're going to think about when the children of Palestine called your name and your administration was able to scare you into silence. And I don't think what I do is for everyone. I think everybody has their job in fighting against the genocide. Like, I don't think every single person could or should do what I do. But I think it's like it's the bravery to choose the hard thing. You know, it's maybe you can't go on hunger strike, but maybe you could wear a keffiyeh in your class with your Zionist professor. Maybe you can, when you're not in class, flyer around your campus. Everybody has a job. And I think, like, the number one thing the American government has done is convince you that you are powerless.
Okay, so is there anything I haven't asked about that you want to say that's on your heart or on your mind that you want to share?
I just want to put out this message that I've been putting out to UCLA, that I will not stop my hunger strike until we talk. And I am maybe a lot more stubborn than you think. So let's talk, because the world is watching and the people are watching. And I think you guys have done the wrong thing a lot of times. And this could be an opportunity to do the right thing.
Well, Maya, I'm so glad that you took the time. Thanks for talking with us here on the Revolution Nothing Less show.
Thank you for having me.
All right. So I was very moved by that conversation. I hope that you were as well. And I want to underscore not only the urgency that she is giving expression to about the genocide in Gaza, but also something that she said that I think is really important. The intimidation. You know, she talks about the administration causing students to be afraid to speak up, but I would add to that, I'd expand it. I think probably she'd agree. From the government as well, the terror that's being inflicted, the intimidation, the watch what you say, all of this is one of their most powerful weapons. And the fact is, there are so many people who are outraged about what's happening in Gaza, what's happening with Trump and his attacks on immigrants, his attacks on trans people, purging them soon from the military. There's just the unrelenting assault on the rule of law. We haven't had the time to talk about it. We're going to have to cover it soon. But the conscious policies of this government, not only to ban abortion, which they've done in a third or more of the states, but to raise the rate of childbirth and force more women back into the homes, really drag society back to a situation that is like The Handmaid's Tale, forced motherhood and female enslavement. And you could go across the board, the assault on the environment. There's all the horrors. And there's so many people who are outraged by this, who are offended by it, who don't want to see it go down. We cannot be intimidated. Like the congresswoman said, this is not a time for fear. This is a time to stand up and fight. And it's a time to give people direction for their outrage as well, to give them direction and a sense of how we could defeat this fascism, which underscores what we began with in today's episode. The very important protest that refusefascism.org is calling for this Saturday, May 17th, wherever you are, get out in the streets and raise the demand. The Trump fascist regime must go now. That's something that can really resonate with people, that can connect with their sentiments, but also give it shape and expression to something that would actually be powerful enough to stop this trajectory. Because you can't half-step it with a fascist regime. You can't just hem it in. You have to drive it out. And there's a real move we have to make this weekend to put this demand before millions and to gather the strength and the organized forces to lead millions to wage the fight that needs to be waged to drive this fascist regime from power.
Yeah, and we can't fight it battle by battle. That's the point. You have to take it on as a whole. Go to refusefascism.org to find a local protest, to call a local protest. They have a place where you can RSVP on their website. Be in the streets. Okay, so to take us out, we have something very special and we found very inspiring when we were watching it earlier. There's a beautiful new video from the revolutionary future rock band Outer National called La Gente Nueva. So we're going to let that take us out. We want to thank the team with the RNL Revolution Nothing Less show. And let's raise our sights.
Hey! La Gente Nueva.
Radio Revolución, ¿qué pasa aquí en Cali? Está llegando la gente nueva. Cuéntenos.